And so we have two speakers, Mark Morosetz. And Mark is a co-founder and CEO of WorldWays Social Marketing. He has designed social marketing interventions for such organizations as the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the CDC, and the Gates Foundation. Currently, he is working on several projects designed to reverse the trends of childhood obesity. And then we also have Tavanya Giles, and she is a senior marketing communications lead in social marketing for Neiman's Health and Prevention Services. She has worked with NHPS for the past 4 years in this capacity after being at Drexel University in Philadelphia. Please welcome them. Thank you.
Thank you, Crispin, and good morning. Just a preface, we're going to present on the intervention side today rather than the research side. Just understand that what you're about to see had probably 2 years of research foundation underneath it. We'll be glad to answer those questions, but we thought we'd share the early returns.
And as you can see, Mark and I are very in tune. I just noticed we're in black with checkered jackets, so we stay in touch. And this is actually Mark's disclosure in that he works with WorldWays, who we actually contract with to do our social marketing work.
But I am a public health guy at heart. It's as much my life work as it is my business.
Yes, it is, definitely. And there's our contact information if you want to find us afterwards. And we'll also be here after the presentation. So Nemours Health and Prevention Services, just to provide you with some background information, is part of the Nemours Foundation. We're actually a pediatric health system, which is based in Jacksonville, Florida, but we have offices in Delaware. And back in 2004, the foundation decided that they needed to not just do treatment and provide health care to kids, but they actually needed to prevent disease. So they established Nemours Health and Prevention Services. And back in 2006, we actually decided as an organization that we would develop and utilize the tools of social marketing as part of our work. Just to provide you with some additional information, Nemours Health and Prevention Services is basically currently focused on childhood obesity. It's one of our core areas of our focus, but we're also starting to do some work on emotional and behavioral health. So with the campaign, currently the work that you'll see is really focused on our childhood obesity efforts, which for us are focused around making policy, practice, and behavior change. So we developed the campaign to make Delaware's kids the healthiest in the nation. And as Mark said, we did a lot of research, key informant interviews, background work to develop the campaign. And what we decided for our goal was basically we wanted to create the ability, opportunity, and motivation for all Delaware kids to live healthier lives, whether it had to do with childhood obesity, injury prevention, or their emotional behavioral health. Our objective here with this campaign at this point in time is to reverse the trends toward increasing childhood overweight and childhood obesity. So why focus on policy practice change? We actually just had Angela Glover Blackwell at our presentation, and we think she actually kind of pulled it together in the simplest format for us, and these are two of her quotes. You can't blame people for doing what they are supposed to do when they don't have the opportunity to do what's right. And don't ask what's wrong with them. Ask what's wrong with what surrounds them. So we needed to have this policy focus in addition to the behavior change focus, which is more common in utilizing social marketing.
Our framework for the campaign is the People Places Logic model. This is a format that my colleagues Ed Maybach and Lorian Abrams and I developed in 2007, which was really an attempt to synthesize social ecological models of health with a wide range of models about different types of interventions and say, let's come up with something prescriptive for field practitioners so that all of us who are working in the field can determine where will we get the greatest result in the shortest period of time most efficiently. So for example, here in the Nemours situation, we knew that our end result needed to be healthier people and healthier places, measured in a variety of different ways. But the question was, did we go for behavior first? Did we go for norms first? Did we go for environment first or some combination together? And it was very clear that the environmental barriers for many families to lead healthier lives for children were significant in terms of physical activity opportunities, healthy eating opportunities, healthy choices in the school. And so to get at those, rather than push at individuals and groups and communities to, say, demand change, we came up with the notion that perhaps social marketing techniques could be used to actually influence practice and policy, kind of take a little different approach than the traditional advocacy approach to making this kind of change in practice and policy. So our approach was to take a classic social marketing view, strategy, tactics, make sure we had product, make sure we had place, make sure we had price, and make sure we had promotion tactics in play to bring about policy and practice change. Tavania and I are now going to share with you some of those and then a little bit about the early returns. On the product side, we really needed to give policymakers a tangible product that they could understand and support rather than just provide them with all the science about childhood obesity. And that product is 521 Almost None.
And for us, as you can see in the logo that we developed here, the 5 is the 5 or more servings of fruits and vegetables. The 2 represents 2 hours or less of screen time. The 1 is 1 hour or more of physical activity, and it doesn't have to be consecutive. And the almost none is almost no sugary sweetened beverages or sports drinks. And for us, it's really a tangible, concrete way to show the behaviors that we want kids to live, but we know that we need policymakers to create the opportunity and the ability for kids to live this lifestyle. For the place, we actually do a lot of work in sectors. We have a childcare sector, school sector. We have a community sector, which incorporates our strategic and community partners. It also includes a built environment, youth-serving organizations such as the YMCA and the Boys and Girls Clubs, as well as the policymakers and the legislators themselves. When we look at price, in order to lower the cost of change, we made it easy for policymakers to understand the rationale for change, the best fits, the best return approaches provided, and the tools to support change. And what's so nice about the work that we do in Delaware is that Delaware is such a small state, and everybody kind of knows everyone in the state. So we actually have great relationships with most of our policymakers, so it's pretty easy to get them to do what we want them to do at most times. We also provided an avenue on the web. We felt like we needed to provide web-based support, and we have a website here called makingkidshealthy.org, if you'd like to log on to it. And we have the opportunity for them to go on, learn about the campaign, as well as to sign up to be what we call campaigners, which are basically individuals who are really advocating for change, and we also have blog features, et cetera, on the website. So this is one of actually 3 websites that we have as part of the campaign. This is more of our policy, individual focus. Then we also have our corporate site, which is growuphealthy.org. So we have a variety of information, and we knew that we needed to have these microsites to be effective in our work. For promotion, in order to change the norms and culture and create a groundswell demand for change, we appealed to adults to do the right thing. What we heard in our key informant interviews is that it's going to take the collective efforts of all adults to see changes in behaviors as it relates to 521 Almost None. So what they told us is that, you know, we as policymakers can't do these changes by ourselves. We as decision makers, whether I'm a head of a school district or on a school board, I can't do this by myself. And in taking that look, they also said, well, kids can't do this by themselves, which helped us come up with our tagline, which is kids can't do it alone. And this is one of the ads that we ran back in 2007, basically showing kids in a situation where it's basically obscure. They're trying to build a playground. We know that they can't do this by themselves. They don't have the right tools, the right instruments. We wanted to draw attention to, you know, them being more active, which is the one side of our message, but they can't do it alone. So we had a series of print ads, billboards, TV spots. We ran a few op-eds. We basically looked at all of the media where our policymakers would go to get the message, and that's one of them. And here's another example around sodas and trying to get sodas out of school. And we knew that it was, you know, again, showing kids in ridiculous situations, but we wanted to call attention to the issue and showing that they can't do these things by themselves.
From a marketing perspective, one of the things that we found very powerful was in this first phase of the campaign, we used what you would call a classic push strategy, where you try to push the product through a distributor to the people who you want to receive it. In other words, we want this lifestyle change. Our champions, who are our policymakers, we want them to adapt it, and we want them to make it accessible to kids and families. That effort was fairly successful, as you'll see, but phase two is to work the demand equation from the other side. Now, by working with parents, by working with kids, we're actually creating a demand pressure on the policymaker, on that practice maker to change. So We catalyze some change in some schools. Some schools, for example, have maybe not gone all the way. You now have parents and families and kids asking for healthier options. We now have some motivation for existing change. And it really takes great advantage of this push-pull marketing dynamic. How well is it working? Well, we have some early returns. Tovania will take you through some of those, and I'll summarize them.
We actually officially launched our campaign back in August of 2007. And at that point in time, we were able to get over 200 what we call champions on board. 20 of those are what we call our really high impact strategic partners. And for that, for us, that's basically organizations who really reach a large number of kids in Delaware. So we have 200, including our governor, all of our congressional delegates, pledged on, and we're at our launch event and said, you know, we want to actually be a part of this campaign, and we pledge to do what we can to make Delaware's kids the healthiest in the nation. We also have a 40-member, or what actually started as a 40-member state countywide coalition in the southern part of Delaware, which actually has grown to 140 members in 2 years. We call it our Sussex County Child Health Promotion Coalition. And this is just one of the events with two of our animated characters targeting kids, Min on the right and Andreas on the left, and they represent the 5-2 and almost none behaviors for kids. And we're actually reaching 30,000 children in that part of the state alone. We have our sector-specific initiatives, and one of that is in the school sector. And we actually are really starting to see a lot of policy and practice changes. And what I have to say is for Nemours, social marketing is really only one of our three key strategies. We use that along with the work of our strategic partnerships, as well as the work of managing and mobilizing knowledge and get it out into the community. And what we've been able to do is we passed legislation in the school sector where kids are actually getting 150 minutes of physical activity in the fourth grade. And we have the fitness gram taking place statewide. But again, there's still more that we can do, and that's what we're looking at in the coming phases of the campaign, is how can we get more policies and practices changed statewide. We have a bipartisan resolution endorsing the campaign and the 5-2 Almost None lifestyle. We've had very great support by our current governor, current lieutenant governor, Parks and Recreation, Department of Education. We had child care legislation passed, guidelines related to healthy eating and physical activity. So we've started to see a lot of movement around the work that we've been doing.
The other aspect of this campaign has been its ability to leverage resources. Tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, in contributed media and op-eds and other mentions that really help us surround parents and families with reminders and messaging, all driving hopefully towards some pretty significant impact over the course of the next couple of years. Clearly, right now, we have extensive community engagement in all sectors of the community. We work very hard now to reach out if there are sectors of rural communities, ethnically diverse communities, where there may not be enough representation. Then again, that extra effort to know where folks are and who you need to bring in has been really critical. The reach is very significant in terms of the number of children and families, the number of programmatic initiatives. When you have 11 school districts working actively to change policy and practice inside the school, opportunities are really changing. The big bottom line is yet to come, as all of you would expect. You know, how are we going to measure, and how effectively will we ultimately be able to measure changes in behavior, changes in attitude, changes in risk factor and health status? And all of that is in the evaluation model right now. Obviously, this campaign is very young. We are seeing changes in attitude. 8-10%, I think, are the numbers in terms of people that are reporting encountering the campaign in a significant way and making decisions. But ultimately, hopefully, we'll be back in a year or two talking about very measurable psychological and biometric indicators that this campaign, along with all the other things that Nemours is doing, is having a significant effect to reverse this trend of childhood obesity. So with that, we'll questions go to the entire panel, and thank you all for listening. We appreciate it.
So first of all, I just want to thank all of our panelists this morning, and as well as the Community Health Planning and Policy Development Caucus for organizing this panel. So now we can actually open it up to questions from the audience. Yes?
For the first speaker, did you, among your three hospitals, did you face pressures for each of the hospitals wanting very expensive equipment, such as robotic surgery machines, PET scanners, et cetera? If you did, did it make sense geographically? If it didn't, were you able to control them so that the, you know, each hospital wants its own thing, so they are the best?
The question was, when we did this batching process, did we face pressures from individual hospitals, particularly around the high-end technology for what they wanted best? The answer being, oh my golly, yes we did. And I left 20 years of state and local government thinking I had reached the age where I could put politics behind me when I went into healthcare, and boy, did I fail to appreciate how profound and severe healthcare and particularly hospital politics can be. The way that we mitigated against it was really in three ways. First of all, by making sure that our decision-making body, although reflected the hospitals, did not have paid hospital administrators. We put them on a technical advisory group so we could really have the decision-making process free of that pressure. Number two was we spent a lot of time working through Monte Carlo simulations and looking at our inpatient data to really zero in on the fact that our preventable hospitalizations, ambulatory care sensitive hospitalizations, are about 9% of all hospitalizations in our region, but they really account for about 50% of the ED visits and over $130 million in associated charges. And we really use that data to impress upon the community and on this process that we're really not going to cut down on those types of admissions simply by having the best tertiary and quaternary care possible, that getting at those issues of cardiovascular health and getting at issues of diabetes really are going to be primary and preventive care arguments. And it really was quantifying the real dollar cost that allowed the conversation to shift away from what's best for me into what's best for the community. Yes, and that was the beauty of having the insurers at the table, because of the fact that the insurers help determine what gets paid for, and so we were really able to push more of the investment away from that area. And I think it really is the value of bringing the data to the table and being willing to get our heads beat in, which did happen.
Great. Next question? Yes. There are other Asian populations within our county. The majority do tend to be of Chinese descent. However, just because of the census data, we tend to lump in the, but we have a high Tongan, actually our Tongan population is the highest outside of Tonga in the country. And then we also have a lot of Filipino. And then there's Chinese. And then, am I missing any other one, major one? No, those are the main key ones. You know, did we ask about?
When you focus on only monolingual, so these are probably recent immigrants.
It's not the entire population. So that's another thing too that was a bit difficult when we approached this project, because when we think about a lot of the generalizations that we have of specific groups, it's very different when we start looking at a subset of the group. So only people over the age of 40, then the characteristics of the group start looking differently as well. Any other questions? Yes.
For the San Mateo group, the economy of the group is a tremendous change. What could be expected in the next decade, you see a tremendous change. We have a huge change in the housing market, which significantly the change that's happening in San Mateo. We have a change in the economy, and you also have a different, really distinct difference possibly with this baby boomer population, which I'm not, okay? And I'm going to be looking at 65 to be, you're making this a big change that's distinctly different than that pre-boomer population. Have you speculated, well, I didn't see a clear speculation about what those things might lead to in terms of your planning process and outcomes of that planning.
So there are certain parameters. There are about 10 parameters within our model that we can change, including real income, inflation rates, changes in the average cost of a mortgage, as well as changes in the average cost of rental rates. And so luckily in San Mateo County, the impact of the housing bubble burst hasn't impacted our county very much. However, there has been an impact. And so those are things that we can change in the model, but we don't want to change them preemptively. So we want to make sure we're only going to influence the model every maybe 2 years, so just so that we're consistent with the numbers that we put out. But you're right, all those different factors do influence how many people we're going to have in the county in the year 2030. And another thing as well is also just even changes in availability of senior housing. So right now we're working on a variety of projects that will offer affordable housing for older adults in the county. So there are things that we're doing today as a result of the initial numbers that we got that will now change the potential number in the future. So those are things that we're going to change in the model eventually. So I don't know if there's anything you want to add.
Part of the rationale for having a parameter is things do happen. You can't predict the future. And so it does allow some flexibility.
Yes. Any other questions? Yeah. Yes, in the back.
I have a question for the social marketing folks. Can you tell us a little bit about what sort of baseline data you have gathered for your evaluation and how you did it?
We actually have a statewide survey that we're doing as part of the Delaware. It's called our Delaware Survey of Children's Health. And we have gathered data so far that shows us that the awareness level of our message is currently at 4.7%, and that's among adults with children 0 through 17. Then we also asked a question to adults without kids who are really those policy and decision makers, and their awareness level of the message was 9.7%. So that's where we started. We won't have the final results on that until 2009.
We also had a baseline inventory of policy and practice initiatives that were either underway or pending or failed. So we scanned there's an entire policy environment scanned for a baseline, as well as the statewide survey, which is attitudinally based. So we had both of those in the early stage.
And I had another question here.
Social marketing as well. One of the last slides that you showed, I'm going to call it like a change model that started with the community engagement and ended with the demonstrate behavior. We had a lot of the risk factors and you brought in attitude, behavior, and so forth. You mentioned environmental quality. I was wondering if you could give me some specific examples of that environmental quality.
Yeah, I think that there were various, there were various dimensions. The primary focus has been lately on the built environment, because a lot of the barriers that we encounter in Delaware are either in the urban core, lack of access to fresh foods, lack of access to safe places for physical activity, but similar types of challenges in the more rural areas as well, and then even the sort of vast middle of the state. So we were really looking at built environment issues. I think it's possible to add to that dimension as others come to the coalition more of some of the classic environmental health issues. If there are actually adverse influences, like I'm working on a separate project in the Bronx where toxic environmental quality may be a bigger concern than some built environment issues. But in Delaware, it's pretty much a built environment focus right now.
Great. Other questions? Going once, going twice. I really want to thank our panelists this morning for being here, and thank you all for joining us. And if you have any other questions, we'll be around for a few minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.